Today is January 3rd, 2018, and this is episode number 444 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
I'm pretty sure that's a palindrome. And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm currently wondering what it's like to live in Australia. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, head over to facebook.com/groups/context machine and join us there. Join us in the conversation.
That would be sweet. So I've heard what it's like. It's like living in a land down under where women glow and men thunder.
But that's a digestive issue. Probiotics will help.
That explains so much. Yeah. I've also seen Crocodile Dundee, which is no help at all because he's not even in Australia.
What? What are you saying?
Crocodile Dundee, he went to New York.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that he did.
Yeah.
25 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. Why don't you just remember that?
Anyway, Apple TV.
Yes, Apple TV.
I think you guys talked about Apple TV this morning on the Daily Observations.
We did. We started talking about Apple and Netflix, and that ended up taking us down the path of Apple TV, because you know when I have John and Kelly on the show, it's a lot like herding articulate cats.
Right. Right.
And I say that with love, because
of course
I have so much fun with those conversations.
Yeah. Well, I thought that what we could talk about is a little bit different, and that we could actually talk about what it would take to make Apple TV great again.
Okay.
Or even just great.
Okay. Well, then let's start with, do you feel like it ever was great?
No.
Okay. Well, then, okay. So the bar set low.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, then let me ask you, why don't you think it's a great product?
You know, like, to me, Apple should have from the get-go made TiVo, but better. You know, TiVo always felt to me like a Mac product, you know, even though it's not a Mac product and you know, it runs on Linux. But, you know, TiVo, especially the early iterations, and I think that actually changed over time. The most recent version of TiVo to me, actually, I haven't used the current brand new, spanking new version of TiVo, but the version before that wasn't quite as good as TiVo when it first started off. But everything always worked on TV like I expected it to. Mm-hmm. Like, if I didn't know how to do something, I would always try it out. Like, well, you know, I want to do this, and this is how I think I should be able to do this. And it always worked that way.
Yeah. And that was just it. I remember when I was a TiVo customer, that's one of the things I loved. I want to find a show. I just do a search, and what I think should work for setting all the other parameters for recording, it just worked. Yeah.
Right. And that was great. I love that. But I always wanted, you know, I always wanted Apple to make my set-top box. I wanted Apple to make the show that would my DVR. I wanted Apple to make the show, the box that would sit there and sit in between me and the crappy cable company I was dealing with. Mm-hmm. Because cable companies are crappy.
Sure. Yeah. You wanted a friendly mediator for your cable TV experience.
Right. And TiVo is a friendly mediator, even in its current iteration. Okay, again, I haven't actually used the brand new version of it, but I did. I went to a focus group for that, but that's beside the point. It seems fine. The version before that seems fine, even if it wasn't as good as the very brand new, brand spanking original TiVo, it was still infinitely better than any cable box I've ever used. And that's fine. But Apple seems like Apple could have been able to make a DVR that sat in between us and our cable companies, and we just would have loved it. Everybody would have loved it.
Oh, yeah. I would have bought the crap out of that.
Yeah. But Apple didn't. And when they released Apple TV, it wasn't a DVR.
No, it was designed to be an Apple content consumption device.
Right. A device for you to access and consume, you know, content from the iTunes store or content that you had local in iTunes, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's how it started off. And then Apple eventually added apps, and that's great, sort of.
Right. And it also shifted from focusing on your local content to focusing on streaming content.
Right. Apple's, I think Apple was very prescient in focusing on the idea that most people don't really want to have, don't care about having their content local. They don't need it on their Macs. Some of us want it. Don't get me wrong. Some of us want it. Some mm-hmm. of us want it dearly on our Macs. But most people don't really care.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but most people, what they want is the convenience of everything all the time, wherever they are.
Right. And having our content sit on Apple servers, and Apple doing an excellent job of making that readily available to us, is great. That's fantastic. But the problem is that Apple doesn't offer all of the content. And I'm certainly not going to watch all my TV by buying subscriptions to it on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's crazy. That's no way to cut cords.
No. And as it stands for me today, I use multiple services. So I have Apple Music subscription, I have a Netflix subscription, and I have an Amazon Prime subscription.
Right. And I've got, I'm currently without cable, like you. Actually, you don't have cable either.
Mm-hmm.
And in my house, we do Hulu Live and Amazon Prime, because we're Amazon Prime members anyway,
mm-hmm.
and Netflix.
So we're in pretty much the same boat. We just have swapped out Hulu for Apple Music between us.
Right. Oh, and yeah. And I certainly have Apple Music. I don't watch much on it, at least not yet. I intend to watch the shows that we know are in development.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to Ronald Moore's show.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Amazing Stories too.
Oh yeah. Amazing Stories.
And I'm a big fan of Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, so I'm going to give I'm not hungering for that particular show, but I'm going to give it a shot for sure.
Oh, sure. I've
got enormous respect for both of those actresses, and interested to see what they do in producing roles.
Yeah, I think that could be a lot of fun.
Okay, so that's great, but still, there is something about, and this could be my age. Right. There is something about having channels that are showing content, and I can choose the channel I want to watch.
You know, for me, that all changed when TiVo came on the scene. And for me, I no longer cared about what channels I had. I cared about what shows I had.
Yeah. You know, I get that. I very much get that. And my counter to that is, when I do care, when I do want to just be able to pick a channel, it's because I'm working and I want TV on in the background. Because, I mean, I'm weird. I think I've mentioned this before. I know I mentioned it to you personally, Jeff, but I'm pretty sure I mentioned on the show. If I'm writing, for TMO, if I'm writing nonfiction,
mm-hmm.
I can't listen to music. Because I'm singing the music.
Sure.
I tried it just yesterday. I was listening to some Beatles, and all, you know, I'm singing. And if I'm singing, I'm not writing. And instead I watch TV, and by watching TV, I mean, it's on, it's in the background. I'm really not paying very close attention to it. And so I love having a channel like the Science Channel, mm-hmm. or news or the History Channel or something like that, just going in the background where there are shows that I'm interested in, but they're not shows I have to pay attention to. So that's my personal quirk. And I realize that that's probably not going to apply to the vast majority of people.
Yeah, but still, that's a totally valid thing. And I can see where that would still fit in with a much better Apple TV experience.
Yeah, I mean, it would.
If I could talk to my Apple TV and say, "Yo, Siri, I want to watch season 2 of Travelers." And it just does that. Or, "Yo, Siri, I want to watch the Science Channel." And it just does that.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
Sorry about that noise, folks. That would, in fact, be cool. And I should finish up because I'm just the tiniest bit OCD. If I'm writing fiction, I cannot watch TV and I listen to music. So it's like the opposite.
I find that fascinating.
I don't understand it either. So anyway, here we go with where Apple TV is today. So like Hulu Live has got like 40 channels, but Hulu does, and this will really surprise people who don't use Hulu Live, but Hulu makes a terrible interface. They're not good at the interface.
You know, my only experience with Hulu was early on. And the interface was pretty crappy then.
So yeah, pretty crappy then. So with Hulu Live, you get 40 channels that'll just stream for you, and they're good channels. I think there's only one or two of my sort of go to channels that weren't involved, that aren't part of this package, and I can just turn on CNN or the History Channel and stream it, and that's great. But I can't actually browse my channel. Why? That's the one thing that cable channels, cable networks have been doing forever.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Be more descriptive with your feedback.
Yep. Okay. So what I'm seeing here is we're both frustrated because we see where there's so much opportunity for a much better television viewing experience than we're getting from any service, and no one is stepping up and making that happen.
And that includes Apple.
And that
because totally Apple says that voice is the way to go, but I still got to keep, track of my shows, right? I gotta keep track of what apps they're on sometimes to be able to find them. I've got to know where to look.
Yeah.
And the apps don't all seem to talk to the Apple TV the same way.
Correct.
And Apple TV doesn't seem to talk to all the apps the same way.
And there's no consistency within the TV app.
Yes. Well, between the third, you don't mean between Apple TV software.
No.
You mean between the third-party apps?
Between the third-party apps and interacting with the TV app. An example, you can find everything from like CBS All Access through the TV app. But for Netflix, you can only find old library content. And that inconsistency is a big problem. Never mind that you have no clue what app you're jumping to at any given time when you're selecting something from the TV app.
Yes, I agree. So what would it take to make Apple TV great? Do you remember Steve Jobs saying we cracked the code for having an internet connected TV?
And I'm still waiting to see that come to fruition because...
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah. I suspect that he meant voice control.
Well, that would only be one aspect of it. Because if voice control interacts with Apple TV the way we do today, it is definitely not cracked.
Right. I agree with that. He might have thought that was, I don't know. It's hard to know exactly what he meant when he said that. we don't know, because he was talking to Walter Isaacson. This was this went in Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs. And we don't know exactly what Steve meant. I do suspect that he was talking about voice control in Siri. And if so, we haven't seen it. And I don't think Apple has done a good job of unifying. Apple TV should make it easy for me to cut the cord.
Yeah, it should make it compelling to cut the cord.
Should make it compelling, right? And we know, of course, that there's a bunch of content stuff that Apple has been trying to do for at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We know that Apple has been trying to do some kind of TV content deal, working with the studios, working with the cable companies. And, like, you know, the cable companies don't want Apple taking over their customer experience because they know that Apple would do it better than they would.
Mm-hmm.
And the studios don't want to give Apple control because they know that Apple would do a better job than they would. And they're all terrified of this, that they look at what happened to the music industry. And rather than seeing Apple having saved the music industry, they instead look at the fact that the cable company lost control of its, the record labels lost control over any kind of relationship they had over the customer experience.
And yet their business improved.
Yes. Well, their business didn't die as fast as it was.
Yeah.
So the rate of decay slowed down dramatically.
Okay. Well,
there's still
can get it.
Yeah. There's still the issue that most people, especially young people, just basically think they should get everything for free. They shouldn't have to pay for anything. And yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's so we know that Apple was working on this. We know that they were stymied by the content owners and cable companies. And we know that Apple is now going the Netflix route in developing their own original content. And that's going to make Apple TV, it's going to make Apple Music, or, you know, however Apple ends up branding or, you know, delivering this content. The content will theoretically bring the eyeballs, which makes everything else about the platform more compelling to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great.
Yep.
But it needs to not suck. We need to be able to browse our content in a way that actually makes sense for us.
So I came up with an idea today that I'm going to toss out, and then you can praise it or tear it apart as you see fit. So let's look at the TV app for a second. It's actually a good concept, meaning you have a unified interface for all the content that you want to watch. The implementation, not so good. What if that was set up so that the content creators, instead of creating their own Apple TV apps, so we're jumping from app to app, what if they were instead making their channel plugins for the TV app? So you stay in the interface, the one unified interface, and you're not jumping to other apps, but as you get a new subscription to whatever,
sign me up.
Just plugs in.
Sign me up. You know what I want to do? I want to be able to browse my channel. I want to be able to browse by show. I want to be able to browse. I want to be able to, you know, do all the kind of search. You know, find me, you know, show me romance movies. Show me movies with Matt Damon. Show me movies directed by so-and-so. Show me movies from Lionsgate.
Mm-hmm.
Show me action TV shows, whatever. I want to be able to browse all that stuff, but I also want to be able to browse by channel. I mean, like, Netflix does the best job, I think, of letting you find and browse content.
Yeah, which to me makes so much more sense, because you know the kinds of things you want to watch or the specific shows you want to watch, and you shouldn't have to worry about, well, did I go to the right channel? Did I go to the right version of the right channel? Did I launch the right app? It should just be about, this is the show I want to watch, and now I can see it. You know, of course, knowing that some people are going to do like you, where they just want to turn on a specific channel and let it run.
Right. And again, I want to emphasize that I don't think I'm like somehow representative of like a huge swath of consumers on that particular issue.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's if there's like if you know that there's a specific channel that's doing some special thing, like what's the network that does Shark Week? You know, that sort of thing. If there's like a theme week happening on some network and sure. You just want to watch that content without thinking about specific shows, yeah, it'd be nice to be able
Discovery.
To. Discovery. Yeah, there you go. Yes, Discovery Channel. So, you know, you could just say, yo, Siri, turn on Discovery Channel. And now you're just watching whatever the theme content for that special week is.
Right. Right. And I also want to be able to have shows captured like a DVR. You know, grab me every new episode of whatever the show is. I can't think of any shows. All the shows, like the Orville. Fine, the Orville. I've got some nitpicks with that show, but the Orville. Fine, you know, grab me new episodes of the Orville so that I can go and watch them in time shifted and watch it.
You know,
and also.
With the technology that's available today, the great thing is you don't even have to record that locally. It's just when the show's available, your Apple TV, and I'm doing air quotes, DVR, tags it as available for you. And now it's in your queue to go and watch. So it would be like a DVR in the sense that you would see that sort of interface. But you wouldn't necessarily have to download the content before watching it or have it saved locally to watch it.
Yeah, fair enough. And I guess that does sort of strike to the heart of what we're saying before, where Apple has chosen to focus on Apple dissemination mm-hmm. of product, of its shows, of its TV shows and movies. If it is completely irrelevant to me where it's being stored, that's great. If it's not completely irrelevant to me, meaning that if I'm going to be annoyed that it's not locally recorded.
So you want a USB 3 port on the back of your Apple TV so you can plug in an external drive and have
stuff locally. No, yeah, or Apple could just, you know, yeah, that's one way to do it. Sure. Or Apple could just put a hard drive in the darn thing.
Yeah, I like the idea of not having the drive built in, but as something you add on. Because
but then now you got another box, got cables.
All right, so you design it so that that the Apple TV just sits on top of the drive, just sits on top, and now it's connected, and no extra power cords or anything, pass through power from the Apple TV.
Yeah, that would work.
But the reason I like that idea is because there's a lot of people that really don't care about the local storage. But for the people that do, then that would make a nice add-on. And then for everyone else, your Apple TV is still a smaller box. And it seems like a nice compromise between features and device size. But the point is, there are people that really want that content stored locally. And so,
yeah, my only way to do it. I want to emphasize my only emphasis on local storage is simply that it not be a pain for me to be able to watch it. Like, you know, I don't choose it and then, you know, starts watching. Even I don't, and not even 20 seconds later, I want to, you know, like, boom, I want to be able to go watching just like I do with the TiVo.
Okay.
Just like so, I did with the TiVo.
And I'm not trying to talk you out of local storage. I'm just curious, when you watch content on Apple TV, do you have a lag from the time you say play to the time?
Not much of one. Okay. Not much of one. So, I mean, I think that could probably, but I also have, I've got fiber here, so I've got a ridiculously fast connection to the internet.
Oh, holy crap. Yeah.
So, AT&T fiber to be precise, and it's by just for full disclosure, it's not perfect. Like, it's a little bit erratic, but when it's on, it's on. To be fair, I usually only have about, you know, somewhere between 200 and 400 megabits up.
You really, really want me to have to do edits on this show, don't you?
Right. So I know that you guys talked on TDO about like the idea about Apple, that Apple should buy TiVo. Apple shouldn't need to buy TiVo to make Apple TV the DVR replacement. You know how Tim Cook talked about how, like, you know, people that netbooks, people are going to be unhappy with netbooks and they offer an inferior experience and these sorts of things. And, mm-hmm. but he never, and I always talked about how he never denigrated what people wanted to use netbooks for, which is to have a light device to go, you know, to go out and about with.
Right.
Right. And boom, Apple releases the iPad. And Apple competed, Apple put netbooks out of existence with the iPad, which is a completely different device. Right? It's not the same device. Apple didn't make a netbook. And where I'm going with this is that there are things that we want DVRs for. Apple should make a device that does what we use DVRs for. Doesn't have to be a DVR. Doesn't have to be a better DVR. Doesn't have to be a TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it should take the place of the things that of it should take the place of a DVR and do the things and accomplish the same things that the DVR does for us. Tackle those same needs, those same wants. And Apple has not done that with Apple TV. Apple has not given us the thing that makes a DVR irrelevant. If Apple isn't going to make a DVR, they should make the DVR irrelevant. And Apple TV in no way does that yet.
But it could. And that's part of what's so frustrating. It's like Apple. Actually, I don't know. Why is Apple dragging their feet on this?
Okay. Check this out. Okay. Check this out. So Apple has been trying to get these deals. We just talked about that. Apple's been trying to get these deals and they can't get them because the content industry is actually pretty happy with the status quo. Cable companies make a crap ton of money. The studios make a crap ton of money. Actually, movie studios have been hurting, but the TV studios are making a crap ton of money. Mm-hmm. The television networks and the local television stations are still doing well, right? No one wants any of that to change. No one that's vested over there wants that to change. Okay. And Apple has not been able to get the deals. So Apple looks to what Amazon has done and looks to what Netflix has done. And they said, you know, okay, we've got to do our own content. So, you know, they try, of course, to have ADQ getting those deals to happen, which was, you know, resulted in the Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke, both of which are not good in my not all that humble opinion. And by which I mean, I have no humility whatsoever in most of my opinions. And so then Apple hires Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg and gives them a huge budget. Says, go make a studio for us. Get some content happening, right? So now Apple is going to bring that content to market and they're going to get the eyeballs. When they've gotten the eyeballs, they can then change the rules and say, okay, if you want to be on Apple TV where we've got all of these eyeballs, this is how you got to do it.
That's an interesting tactic. I didn't say that in a passive aggressive way. I was just saying that's an interesting tactic. I realized the way it came out might not have sounded the way I meant.
So maybe that's the current goal. Maybe that means like, fine, you don't want to play by our rules. All right, we're going to make our platform so compulsory for you to be on. And if you want to be on that platform, you're going to have to play by our rules. And but like Apple can't do that right now because Apple TV is, I mean, you know, Roku crushes the Apple TV. People want set-top boxes for Netflix.
Fire TV. I mean, it doesn't give you Apple Music, but for a lot of people, they don't care.
Yeah.
And if they already have an Echo in their house, they're already using the Alexa interface.
Right.
So it just, Alexa, stop. Anyhow.
I almost made you have to edit.
I'm glad you didn't make me have to edit.
It involved the F word and the B word.
I'm really glad we didn't have to edit.
So, yeah, anyway, Apple needs, if Apple wants to change the rules, it's got to get Apple TV in front of people. And if Apple TV is going to be in front of people, it's probably going to require Apple TV at this point. It's going to require this original content. Mm-hmm. the same way that Netflix did. And I may not be, it may be too late. You know, it may not be possible for Apple to change those rules. And Apple instead needs to get the original content just really to kind of keep up with the Joneses and to use its money to make more money, has a fiduciary responsibility to do.
And if that's all it ends up being, that would still be pretty cool because we could end up with some really amazing content. I mean, idea of not having enough time to watch all the really cool shows.
Yeah, kind of, right? But you know, we can catch up on them when the inevitable bust happens with this golden age of TV. When mm-hmm. like every show has jumped the shark and everybody's run out of ideas and we go into this, you know, this 10-year pattern or, you know, 10 or 15-year period where just everything sucks, then we can catch up on all the good stuff.
So this is still working out great for me just all the way around.
Yeah, well, especially for you, because, you know, you start stuff and then you finish it 52 years later.
Right, but I savor it all along the way. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so we have this thing. Yeah, did you see this thing I did yesterday?
Which thing?
we had an Apple death knell. Do you remember that? The death knell counter?
You know, the death knell counter was so far in the back of my mind for so long until yesterday. And then I thought when you said, I have a new death knell, I thought you're making a joke.
Yeah. I have, by the way, if you didn't already notice, Paul Manpilli's name is not centered on the bell. And now you'll be unable to unsee that.
Hold on. Let me go look at the graphic.
I'm talking about Paul Manpilli, who wrote a piece for...
did you do that on purpose?
No, I did not. Are you kidding?
Wow.
You kidding? I would never do that on purpose.
Wow.
It's driving me nuts.
You really messed up the placement on that one.
Yes, I did. Anyway, Paul Manpilli, writing for Banyan Hill Publishing, you know, whatever there. He wrote a piece called Apple is Doomed. He said, truthfully, I love this, by the way. He says, truthfully, I've been wrong on Apple Incorporated stock for a year now. Oh, so, all right. So I guess now it's time we start listening to you, sir. Nothing like a good track record. So anyway, he apparently has been, you know, he's a perennial doom crier for Apple. And, you know, any moment now, that house cards is going to come down. And he said that he makes the argument that basically Apple is doomed because Chromebooks are in schools now instead of MacBooks iPads, but instead of Macs. Instead of MacBook Airs or MacBooks or whatever. And he's right about that. He's right about the fact that Chromebooks are crushing Apple in the education space. Apple has seemingly all but ceded the education space. Like, you know, they seem to be working on education about as hard as they worked on the pro market, the creator pro market, for the last 4 years, which is to say not at all.
Yeah. And so as a result, we have seen the days of classrooms filled with Apple computers just vanish. And yeah, it's all these little cheap Chromebooks.
All these cheap Chromebooks, and it's super annoying. You know, I don't know what I mean. Apple doesn't need to never needs to compete with Chromebooks on price, but they need to be doing if they want to sell to education, they need to be doing something, because iPads aren't it yet. iPads are not laptop replacements. They're just not. They're just not. Not yet.
It's, you know, in so many ways, yes, that's true. But depending on what people are doing, I mean, I have seen situations where the iPad can be a laptop replacement, but it's certainly not.
I don't think it is for students.
It depends on what they're doing. I mean,
listen, I've been talking to educators, and mm-hmm. they're not having it. And we're seeing this. We're seeing the results. Now, interestingly, poor schools, schools with less money, let's put it that way, in the United States in particular, mm-hmm. and in the developed world, they are often doing things with Chromebooks and basically making their students the product for Google. Everything's being stored on the cloud and Google's whatever the heck Google calls its cloud services these days. And, you know, the apps are in the cloud. Beta, it's funny. The apps are in the cloud and Google is rifling through. They're making these students the product. And they're doing it because Chromebooks are so cheap. And Chromebooks are so cheap because the students are the product. And schools with wealthier money, with more money, they're often using something like OneDrive, Microsoft's OneDrive for document storage.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because it's more expensive to do. The Windows devices are more expensive, but the students aren't the product. So, you know, we have an effect here of, you know, the wealth divide, the wealth gap.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So anyway, that's reality. And Apple is losing share in the ed tech market. It just is. And they don't really seem to be doing anything about it. But Mr. Mampilly's point is that kids started off on Macs in school, grew up to be Apple fans, and that's what has caused Apple's marvelous success today. And so without, you know, losing generations of kids who aren't being brought up on Macs in schools, now Apple's just screwed. This is what he says.
All right. I'm already having trouble with this.
Well, yeah, because it's idiotic.
It is idiotic. And is he not even taking into account that before Chromebooks were the thing in schools, it was just Windows PCs?
Yeah. Apple has had a much bigger footprint in education than it does now. Oh, but yeah. Windows devices have always been, or long been, I should say, the majority of computing devices in school. So it's not like in addition to that, students have iPhones. I mean, okay, here's the thing. Here's what this guy doesn't seem to get. I don't know what all this guy doesn't get, because he doesn't get a lot. But he thinks that Macs have been the halo device for iPhones. He doesn't say that. But the only way his reasoning makes sense is if he believes that Macs were the halo device that brought iPhone users into the fold, which doesn't make any sense. What does make sense is that iPhones and iPods before them brought people to the Mac. It's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he's just wrong. You know, because these kids, a lot of these kids still have iPhones and they still have iPads and they're still growing up to be Mac fans or Apple fans.
Right. Yeah. Granted, the Mac did come before the iPhone.
Yeah, but, absolutely did.
But that doesn't mean it's the device that drew people to the iPhone.
Right. Apple is selling more Macs in a quarter than it did in a year, you know, in 2000.
Right. Yeah. And that's because people are drawn into the Apple product community through the iPhone.
Yeah. And before that, the iPod.
Right.
Those are the products that brought people to the Mac, not the other way around. And that, therefore, his entire line of reasoning is ridiculous. Now, that doesn't mean I do think that Apple has a problem in education. And I wish that Apple would remember, like, you know, Apple doesn't have any loyalty, right? Like, Steve Jobs always loved education. I don't even know if he thought that the education market was a huge source of profitability for them. Although Mr. Manpilli had trotted up a quote where Steve talked about the importance of Apple in education from a time when iPhones and iPods weren't the devices that were bringing people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he brought up a quote where Steve Jobs talked about the importance of having Apple in the education market. And it seems like, just like with the Creative Pros, where Apple took their eye off that ball. I mean, you know, forgetting the huge, you know, trickle down umbrella effect that it's like Apple had was in this like sandwich. You had education making fans of young people, and then you have Creative Pros making fans of adults. Like, you know, the Creative Pros did stuff, really cool stuff with Max. You see Max, you know, in any kind of documentary about a musician would at some point it's going to involve a Mac somewhere in a recording studio.
Do you remember the Saturday Night Live commercial sketch from, I think it was back in the 80s, the power to crush the other kids? And it was totally that. All the other kids were using like crayons and pencils to put together their reports, and this one kid used his dad's Mac and did the whole report on that, and had these colored pages, and all the other kids are like, oh, okay. And it ends, the commercial ends with Macintosh, the power to crush the other kids.
I do remember that was a great, it was a great fake spot.
It was, but it was also a great fake spot.
Right. I'm really sorry about all the noise. I don't know what's going on.
I think part of the problem is that you haven't used microphones very often in your life.
Yeah, apparently. I don't really know what's going on here in my home office. So we had these two effects: education making fans of kids, and you had Creative Pros doing all these cool things that had this. You know, I think an enormous impact on Apple's perceived value.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple just seemed to have blown off both markets. I think Apple expected iPads to just magically, you know, take over the classroom. And were shocked when it didn't, and so then it's like, whatever, screw it. And then Creative Pros, Apple blew them off for 4 years.
See, Apple has this double-edged problem. And the first part of the problem is an arrogance in the market space, and I think that comes from really believing they're making the best products, period. And so they expect everyone else to see that and then just gravitate towards the things that they make. And when that doesn't happen, now comes in the second edge of that sword, where Apple is more than happy to just kind of leave products to flounder. And that's not a new thing. They've been doing this for
decades. No, that's been before it used to be when Steve Jobs was hot about something, when he was like really focused on it, you know, it got all the attention and resources, people, you know, and it was awesome. But as soon as Steve Jobs didn't care about something, it tended to get neglected. And that sort of pattern has continued with Apple, where, you know, Apple constantly introduces things and then just blows them off, you know, moves the star player somewhere else. And my point here in regards to this Apple death knell, which is number 71 and the first one since 2015, that at least that I've seen and entered into the death knell counter, is that Apple is seeding the education space, but that's not going to doom Apple.
No, it is not. I mean, if Apple stopped selling Macs completely today, that was it. They just said, we're done. And they would still stay in business for a very long time simply because of the iPhone. And never mind the other things that they're working on that either will generate money in the future or are generating money now. It's the Mac's an important product, but it's not the make or break thing for Apple like it was at one point.
So I got to tell you right now, by the way, I've got CNN on the background. Mm-hmm. And I've got CNN on my TV in the background, courtesy mm-hmm. of Hulu Live. And right now is a commercial playing for the sunglasses that let you see in HD.
Wait, like, this isn't a Saturday Night Live joke?
No. This is I this is a brand new commercial for a product, and this was I first saw a commercial for either these sunglasses or a similar pair of sunglasses, where the woman puts them on and go, oh, it's like everything's in HD. And that was LOL. This is really emphasizing that. As a matter of fact, they're called HD Special Ops.
Seriously?
And you can see in HD is what they're saying.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. And I bet you that sells them. I bet it works. I bet the advertising works.
So I just typed HD Special into Google.
Yeah,
and sure enough, HD Special Ops glasses.
$19.99.
Yeah, $19.99.
Mind you, they may be fantastic. You can
get them sunglasses at Target.
That's great. They're $19.99, and they may be great sunglasses. I don't know one way or another, but guess what? Real life is better than HD. Just saying. Spoiler, real life is better than 4K. It's all the K.
I'm looking at their website right now. They need to hire a web designer in a serious way.
No doubt. All right. So Apple death knell number 71, Paul Manpilli, immortalized with such luminaries as Michael Dell and John Dvorak and Paul Thoreau and Brian Chaffin.
Good times. That's right. You death knelled yourself once, didn't you?
I once said that Steve Jobs, I wish Steve Jobs would go away because he's done enough of saving Apple.
Eventually got what you asked for. I hope you're satisfied.
That makes me sad.
Oh, I'm sad too.
That makes me horribly sad. And it was because I was so cranky about him killing clones, and I was wrong. I just want to be clear about that. So I've enshrined or entombed myself in my death knell counter.
You know, that takes a really big person to be able to realize what they've done and write themselves up for their own death knell counter.
Well, thank you. Thank you. All right. So, good times. We have, what's our third topic?
We have some listener comments.
Oh, right. Why don't you tell us about Joseph Urbanski?
Well, hold on. How about if I do better than that?
Can we, did he ask us to not use his name? Oh, he did not ask us to not use his name.
Well, that's good because that would have involved an edit. Okay, so last week we talked about iMac Pro and upgradability and user replaceable components. And for everyone that listened, you probably picked up on how I triggered Brian by bringing up how there's no panels that you can open up to replace the memory. And so you're welcome if you enjoy watching when I trigger Brian like that.
Yeah.
But Joe,
I know I do.
Well, I do this for you, Brian. Yeah. Anyhow, so Joe Urbanski, he wrote in because he wanted to shed some perspective, or give us some perspective. I mix shed light and perspective. Anyhow, give us some perspective on the missing access panels on the back of the iMac Pro. And he worked in this industry, you know, dealing with certifications for devices that need to have radio emissions managed and controlled. So he's speaking from a place of knowledge. And what he says is that what's involved in meeting the technical requirements and complying with regulations around the world, if you're going to put a panel on something like that, where you have to deal with RF radio frequency leakage, it's complicated and it's expensive. And so you're dealing with not only keeping that RF leakage coming out of the device, but also from getting in the device and screwing with the components that are inside. He says it would cost like $10 per door. So that would be before you do any markups or anything. That would just be Apple's cost to put a single access panel on the back of an iMac would be $10. So if you're looking at just the RAM, that's $20. If you also want to give access to both of the SSDs, now you're up to $40 just to put these doors on there, where you may have issues with tolerances and component manufacturing. And so I've been paraphrasing everything he said, but the gist of it is that this was a lot more than just putting a door on the back so you could get to the RAM.
Yeah. All right. So I can counteract, or I can counter those arguments. Can't counteract those arguments, but I can counter those arguments with a bit of logic. If you can't put a door on the back of the enclosure that you've got, because 10 or 20 bucks out of 5,000 is way too much to spend, make a different freaking enclosure. Design this thing. It's a pro device. Design this thing so that it can be accessible. To wit, like my iMac 5K, where I at least have a door that it gives me access to the RAM.
I'll be surprised if you have a door in your next iMac 5K.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So fine. Four doors is too much. Okay, go ahead and design the thing so that all the RAM is in the same place. Like looking at what we have here and rationalizing choices made ignores the fundamental thing. This is a pro device. It doesn't have to be razor thin on the edges.
So I'm going to toss another thing in here that I'm betting right now Joe is wondering, why haven't I brought this part up from his letter? And it's the regulatory compliance and certifications that go along with this. So you have different certifications in different countries, and just putting all this together and getting through all of the required tests, it sounds to me like that would add a lot to the overall production and production time.
Well, then why is it that every other company can do this sort of thing? I mean, come on. Look, Apple is making a pro device. It needs to be at least partially accessible. It does. It just needs to be. Design the device to be to meet the needs of the users you're aiming it at.
All right, so now I'm going to toss another thing out there for you. And this is
the way, my frustration isn't aimed at Joseph. Everything he says, I'm sure that everything he says is accurate, but I think it doesn't speak to the fundamental problem where Apple is not giving the target audience exactly what it needs. The same is true with soldered in RAM and hard drives on the MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
Okay, so this comes at what Apple's doing from a different angle, from the inside. So iFixit, they got a hold of the base model iMac Pro. Mm. And they did what they do so well, which is strip it down to the frame. Mm-hmm. When they were taking this apart, one thing that they found was that these two massive fans that are inside the case and the air channels that they have so that you can keep that processor cool, where those channels sit obstruct where you would want to put panels to get to the memory.
Okay, well then design it differently. Design it, I mean, make it thicker. There's nothing that says our iMacs have to be that thin. Listen, I'm looking at my iMac 5K and it's gorgeous thin. You know what I can't see right now? It's how thin it is. You know why? Because I'm looking at the front. You're looking at the
front. Right? The only time I can see how thin it was, then you'd have X-ray vision.
Yeah, exactly. If I was standing off to the side and admiring it, I suppose I might really care about how thin it is. I don't. I mean, listen, this thing is gorgeous. The form factor is gorgeous. Apple has made a gorgeous machine. I love Apple's gorgeous machines. But there is a not fine line between pursuing form over function. And up until the iMac 5K, I thought that Apple had pretty much strode that balance really well. I mean, it stinks that I have to crap my case to put a new hard drive in or a new SSD. That mm-hmm. does stink, and it's affecting me personally. And so, I mean, that does stink. But Apple had a pretty, you know, like I said, they balanced that line pretty well. There's a door that I can put in my own RAM, and hard drives are probably the thing that people might replace less, the least. Maybe, I don't know. I don't have any data on that. So it's just this new device is aimed particularly at users, a segment of which will need to upgrade their storage and or their RAM as technology changes over the useful lifespan of this device, which is 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And Apple has chosen a form factor that does not allow that. That makes no sense.
So with Joe's comments that I've been interjecting, I've been acting like I'm his voice. Mm-hmm. I agree. It would be really nice to see some form of user accessible, if nothing else, just RAM on this computer. But I also look at the computer and it's pretty clear to me that Apple sees two segments for its pro market. And it's the segment that wants to buy the thing, set it up, and just run with it. And then there's the segment that wants to have lots of expandability and upgrade options. So they've addressed the first group now, which is take it out of the box. And then when the iMac Pro comes out, then they will have addressed the second segment.
You know what's coming next. Bonk, bonk on the head. Bonk, 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 bonk.
Yeah, do you see I put my little toy army helmet on right before bonk, bonk?
That's good. That's good. You need that. Yeah. I don't know. Give me the four. I don't know. You want me to spend that much money on an iMac Pro? Do not make me have to crack the case to put new RAM in it.
And see, this tells me you're not the target market for an iMac Pro.
I am the target. I am the target market for an iMac Pro.
I'm kind of thinking not.
I am a creative professional, and I don't need the strength LOL strength of the trash can iMac, this trash can iMac.
The strength it represents.
Yeah, well, I don't need the strength of the upcoming Mac Pro. I'd love it, of course, because, you know, like, you know, this would be awesome, but I don't need it. I am the target market for an iMac Pro. I do enough creative professional stuff that I'm the target market.
But you're not likely to buy one because correct. You can't swap out the RAM.
Yeah. Yes. Correct. Yeah. And I'm not going to pay Apple's RAM prices because LOL.
Well, the great thing like, is,
let alone putting in more RAM later, right? I mean, like, you know, so you know, RAM prices come down. So, you know, today I might be just fine with 32 gigs of RAM might be just fine today.
Mm-hmm.
But a year from now, maybe I want 64 because now I can afford it. Because it's A, it's come down, and B, you know, I've been able to put aside more money for more RAM. Same thing with storage. Storage comes down dramatically in price.
Mm-hmm.
This is rocket science. This is easily understood stuff. So Quentin had a comment too.
Oh, Quentin, great.
James in our Facebook group. Over hey, at facebook.com.
Oh, by the way, Joe, groups. Thank you so much for your technical prowess. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the information, and it is excellent for understanding the choices Apple was faced with this form factor. Again, my issue isn't with Joseph's analysis. It's with the underlying premise that we need the form factor that device has, which we don't. That's where you got to start.
So, tell me about Quentin's comment.
Yeah, he wanted to talk about the doors.
Oh, okay. Did he kind of talk about the doors?
Well, yeah. So I guess I should actually say, there's thoughts on the design of the internals of the iMac Pro, lack of door aside. So no, he didn't want us to talk about the doors. He actually wanted to talk about how awesome this thing looks on the inside. He said, I mean, look at it. It's like Darth Vader, Vader's Formula One race car turned inside out.
Yeah, it totally model, is. I mean, it's really cool looking inside.
It is really cool looking. Yeah. And this model, more than any other recent Apple device, reminds me of one of Steve Jobs' design philosophies that even the parts we don't see ever, in the case of the iMac Pro, should be beautiful. The phone, iPhone and Apple Watch are extremely well packaged, but this is a true work of art. Well, I think it is.
You know, I'm with him. But when you crack mm-hmm. that screen off the front of the iMac Pro and look at what's inside, I mean, it looks really cool. And it
really does.
The engineering that went in to fitting everything together inside that case, and to have it look as beautiful as it does, yeah, that's really impressive. The downside yep. is, to really appreciate that, you can't have a screen on your computer.
Right. But what you could do is you could make the inside your desktop a photograph.
Which, last I heard, I don't know if it's out yet, but iFixit was planning on posting a desktop image of the guts of the iMac Pro.
No, see, that's just fantastic. Right
there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that Apple does do. I am not one of these people who thinks that Apple wastes its time making stuff you can't see perfect. I think that's actually part and parcel of what makes the overall Apple experience so awesome. And that includes at Apple Park. I'm happy that Johnny Ive's obsessed about wiring layout and you know, pipes and things that are behind walls.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want that to become I still want the devices to have a form that meets the function.
Yeah, I totally get it. So maybe you can do a Patreon or something and raise money for a Mac Pro when that comes out.
Because
wouldn't that be awesome to have?
Sure.
Yeah.
GoFundMe a Mac Pro.
There we go. You know, that's what I was thinking. GoFundMe.
Because I'm too precious for an iMac Pro.
Yeah. It's, yeah. the brain therapy computer.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, we're over. And I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Quentin for the suggestion over at facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. I want to thank Joseph Urbanski for giving us the fantastic technical analysis of what Apple was faced with the current iMac Pro design. And I want to thank all our listeners for listening to us. This is our first show of 2018.
Yeah. And it looks like it came together quite nicely. Mm-hmm. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bass is recorded by Boom Just For Us. The bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.